Church Life Today is a production of Spoke Street Media and the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame, and is brought to you in part by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union and our listeners.
Catholic schools extend and make present the life of Christ in His church. Yes, Catholic education serves the students who are nurtured in its classrooms, but as we know, the parents and families of those students are also often nurtured and even newly evangelized through the school. Catholic schools can be one of the most important ways in which the church responds to the concrete needs and desires of a given community, and by doing so, draws people into intimacy and communion with Jesus Christ. Today, I welcome to the show Dr. Matthew Varicki, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Dallas, who will share with us not only his vision for Catholic education, but also the ways in which his growing and diverse diocese activates the church's evangelizing mission through its schools. Dr. Varicki is in his seventh year as superintendent in Dallas, a role which he assumed after nearly a decade as a Catholic school director and as a principal. As for me, I'm Leonard DiLorenzo. This is Church Life Today, a production of the McGrath Institute for Church Life and the Spoke Street Media Network. I'm glad you're here. Matt, welcome to the show.
Funny, it is great to be here. Thank you so much for having me today.
Now, Matt, needless to say, it's been an eventful few years. I think we could say that for folks like yourself who are in Catholic educational leadership. And in addition to, you know, interrupting the regular life and rhythm of schools, the pandemic, which we've all heard of, probably also accelerated some trends that were already in place before the pandemic started. Things like the increase of technology in schools, for example, or the mental health stress on students and staff alike, or even shifts in the goals of education itself, perhaps, or the way we think about it. So I think for many of us, but especially for someone like you who's in a position of educational leadership, maybe this has been a time for values clarification and mission focus. So I thought, you know, a good way for us to maybe start our conversation today would be for me to ask you, I guess, what is a pretty basic but really fundamental question, and it's this. Why do you think Catholic education matters?
Well, I think that's a great question. And especially now, as we're beginning to kind of see everyone emerge from the pandemic and, you know, things get quote unquote back to normal, I think there's a much bigger role in Catholic education than we've ever seen really within the history of the church. And the biggest reason for that is, you know, we did see, as you mentioned, these trends kind of accelerate during the pandemic. I am the superintendent of Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Dallas. Diocese of Dallas has about 1.5 million Catholics altogether. We're thrilled if we have about 300,000 show up at Mass on the weekends. And as COVID hit and those numbers declined and we saw fewer people kind of coming on a weekly basis, we began to kind of get concerned that that was going to be the new normal, that the traditional ways that we would go through and evangelize just weren't going to be as effective. And the one thing that we do know as we think about ministry to the peripheries and everything else is that everyone needs to educate their kids. We're getting to a point also where there are all sorts of concerns about how education is affecting students throughout the country. And one of the constancies that Catholic schools have is a real strong values base, so that even for families who may not identify traditionally as a Catholic who goes to Mass every Sunday, they can look at these Catholic schools and say, you know, this is something which reflects my heritage, my values, and ultimately is something which is good for my kids. And so in many respects, you know, we're trying to use Catholic schools as a way to begin to mine people for the parish. In the past, you know, it was always, well, the Catholic school would go to the parish and talk to the people in the pews. And now we're kind of seeing it a little bit differently to say, you know, we have families who are accessible to us, who are in the need of evangelization. We want to get them back into Mass, but we have to meet them where they're at. And, you know, fortunately, we have access to them and their kids 40 hours a week. And so, you know, this is becoming a really active ministry for us in terms of trying to restart that life of the church more than anything. And I think that's why Catholic schools are so critical right now. And in many respects, why I think they're growing. I mean, we saw about a 5% enrollment growth in the last year, primarily down here in Dallas at the kindergarten and first grade level. And I think, you know, more and more families are saying, this is something that we want in our life. This is how we want to raise our kids. And, you know, and it's allowing us to kind of bridge that gap back to Mass.
really interested in hearing more about this sort of link back to parish life, as you talked about it, the way in which you're talking about Catholic schools. And as you said, everybody has to educate their kids. So this is in some ways what they're looking for, and they're valuing the sort of education that's there. But as you were saying, there aren't the same traditional ways of evangelization perhaps in place that were there before. You aren't having the same number of people coming to Mass or engaged in parish life. So how do you think about the school then as this sort of like portal to parish life, or this channel or avenue towards a broader evangelization, when it's certainly the child, but now you're also talking about the parents and the family?
Yeah, and a lot of it is, it comes back to this whole idea of really what is the role of our pastors and our priests. And as I think as the ministry of the priesthood has changed, we're at a point now where we have, you know, fewer priests than we've often seen in many places. You know, I mentioned that there's about 1.5 million Catholics mm-hmm. here. There are fewer than 400 priests in the Diocese of Dallas. Wow. And so, you know, the idea being, you're going to have this personal connection with your priest in the same way you did maybe in the 1950s or 1960s is largely gone. And, you know, that also means that there's this much larger role for the laity in terms of the ministry and their connection. And so the way that I see it is Catholic schools ultimately are kind of creating that personal connection. They're kind of fulfilling that aspect of saying the life that the priest lived is something which was attractive. And for this laity who are now kind of looking at these teachers and these principals, people who have dedicated their lives to a certain set of tenets and beliefs and, you know, ultimately ministry to the church, it's a way to kind of connect to that in a way that's, I think, non-threatening and ultimately really attractive. And so it gives these families a chance to kind of see that, you know, going to church alone is not the only aspect of this. It's a social life. It's a connection of people. It's a common belief system. It's families who want to raise their kids in the same way that you want to raise them. And, you know, I also think we know within an interconnected world that can't be done 1 hour a week. You know, just going to Mass, grabbing a donut afterwards and heading out is no longer something which people ultimately are going to be nurtured and sustained by. The joke that I kind of always make is if you walk past a soul cycle, you know, they might get your phone number and then they will call you every single day for the next month to try to get you to come back in to see what's going on. And I would love for our parishes to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much more difficult for us to do that because it's not necessarily baked into our DNA, but our schools can be like that. You know, they can be a situation that says, you know, you weren't here on Tuesday, what's going on? Is there anything we can do right. to help your family? You know, is there anything that we can do to ultimately connect back to you? And then it does become the social life where mm-hmm. families are coming in for barbecues and they're coming in to meet their children's teachers and they're really kind of raising their child together with a group of like-minded believers. And, you know, and again, I would love to see that kind of come back to the parishes. You know, I think that's the ultimate goal here, but it's going to take more time than we have in the short term. And we have a generation of kids who need this now. Mm. You know, they can't wait for the next generation of priests to come in. They can't wait for those things to recover. And so, you know, it's really essential that we continue to provide that ministry and everything we're doing.
It's interesting to think now again about the parish as the center of this social life, or the church as the center of the social life, or if not the center, at least a hub of it. Like this was, I think, as you're alluding to, something of the idea of the church for many people decades ago, which is this is where a lot of your vital connections come together, where there are people that you know that you share life with, certainly that you pray with, but also that you support and who support you and you raise your children together. And I suppose as we've drifted away from that and lost maybe the parish as that vital center and trying to find ways to bring it back, it's either shifted to other places where people make their primary connections, whether it's the local gym or coffee shop or whatever it is, the communities that they build, or we've just lost that social center itself. And maybe it's been attenuated through our digital habits or just from an increasing sense of isolation and loneliness. So when you're proposing, I suppose, this recapturing of social life through the schools and then back perhaps to the parish, do you find that people are interested in that? Do they have the kind of capacity or the skills for it? Or is that an uphill battle to try and present the school and the parish in that way?
That's a good question. And I would say we don't necessarily always need to be explicit about it as we're approaching this within a lot of these schools. But it all really comes back to, why was your parish originally founded? So the way that we kind of look at this in Dallas is we're starting to kind of think through the charisms for the schools, is that one of the issues that I think has happened with Catholic schools, say, over the last 30 years, is they've largely become homogenized. You know, this whole idea of every Catholic school should look just like every other Catholic school, which, you know, doesn't fit with subsidiarity of the church and oftentimes doesn't fit with the various DNA that you have within these parishes. And it's amazing to me now to sit down with schools and say, well, have you gone back to your original parish charter to see why you exist? And over and over again, these schools are looking at these parish charters and they're saying, well, these are five things that we were doing that we had no idea was the reason that we're doing them. And sometimes it's baked into their mission statement. We had one school and their primary aspect was community. They went back to their parish charter and they found out that the parish was actually founded by a group of people who had bought up all of the houses around the parish. And so, you know, this whole idea of community that they, you know, espoused within their mission statement and how we're all a family, like literally was true. Everybody who came to that original parish could walk there.
Yeah.
And yet they had lost that, you know, over time. You know, they knew it was in their mission statement, but they didn't know why. And so it came to this whole idea of like, hey, we're supposed to be a neighborhood parish school. You know, how can we do that? How can we put those things together? We have other schools that were founded entirely on the idea of evangelization and mission. And so, you know, those are schools that at times would say, well, 40% of our families are non-Catholic. We need to change that ratio up. But then you go back and you look at the parish, and the parish was meant to be an outreach for Catholics within an area which was just really underserved. So in that sense, if you can kind of come back to the whole idea of the Catholic school is providing some type of mission and ministry for that parish in line with the charter, then a lot of times it's not really even a question of kind of how do you have to sell that to outside people. You know, it becomes this kind of self-evident truth of it's you know, really kind of baked into the whole idea of we exist first and foremost to provide some kind of service to our parish community. And, you know, and that might change a little bit, you know, from the standpoint of saying within this old community, it used to be that everyone already went to the parish and now they had a school. Now they're looking at it saying, well, we're going to be the neighborhood school. And, you know, these people who moved in here and didn't realize that that also meant they should be part of this parish, we're going to try to kind of bring that back up so that they understand what that's like. And it still remains a choice. I mean, at the end of the day, they have to have something attractive to these families in order to make sure that they're connected back to it, because you're asking them for a sizable investment. And if it's just this kind of faith formation program, it's really tough to tell families, you need to pay me $9,000 so that your kids can be better Catholics. And, you know, and likewise, it's also difficult to say to families, you need to pay me $9,000 so that your kids can get into Harvard and Yale and Notre Dame. You know, we have to find a way to kind of merge those two things together so that you're kind of perfectly focused on forming saints and scholars and everything that you're doing. And that becomes something not so much that, you know, you can't believe you have to pay $9,000 to get, but you can't believe that it's only $9,000 to make sure that your kids have access to this really incredible tapestry of faith, academics, and learning.
Yeah. Well, you just outed yourself as a Notre Dame alum when you put Notre Dame at the end of Harvard and Yale, as we tend to do. So this is Leonard DiLorenzo. You're listening to Church Life Today on the Spoke Street Media Network. I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Varicki, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Dallas. When you said that, you know, Catholic schools, there's kind of a drift towards homogenization and maybe the thought that every Catholic school has to be the same, and you were talking about going back to the charter of the school to find its sort of founding charism, why does this school exist from the life of the church in this particular area? And that kind of recover some of the variety or distinctiveness of the schools. I also wonder, how do you want to help your schools to respond to the present needs so that what, you know, maybe the charter that was there at the beginning responds to a different kind of situation of the community in which the school exists, you know, 30, 40 years ago, whatever it might have been, from now where it looks out upon, you know, the parish or the church there looks out upon the community that would serve and sees different kinds of needs. I mean, how much can you help these schools to adapt and transform according to whatever the present needs are of their local community?
That is a great question. And we see many times that while there is this like huge connection back to how a parish was formed, sometimes we have a much different approach. So, you know, one example of that, we have a school here, Our Lady of Perpetual Help, It was founded back in the 1950s, and at the time, it was a very middle-class white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, everybody who kind of graduated from that school wound up going to college. Everybody wound up going to Catholic high school and, you know, eventually moved to other places in Dallas. It's now in an area which has changed a lot. It has a lot of lower income housing. It has a lot of families who are new to the area and have recently moved to the area. And so you have this disconnect between the alumni all come from a certain demographic group and the current students are from a completely different demographic group. But the alumni came back to the charter, which basically said, you know, we're here to be a missionary territory for these new families who are moving to Dallas. Because even back in the 1950s, this was an area for new people. And, you know, for them, they don't see any difference. You know, there's really no change for them from that socioeconomic standpoint. It was meant to be a welcoming community for people who needed help at that time. And so they still see it as such. And what that means is that I've got alumni who don't send their kids to the school, who aren't sending their grandkids to the school, who are still incredibly invested within that community because they know how it helped them come through and change.
Yeah.
And their hope is not that kids enrolled at school, at preschool, and stay there till eighth grade. They want families who choose to enroll there to have a better life and to choose a better life. And so that may mean they're only there for 3 years. They're only there for 4 years. But that's a specific role, which is different from a lot of Catholic schools, where not only are they fine with that, but they're willing to kind of invest and make sure that that's a sustainable model.
Yeah.
You also have schools that come back to the whole idea of they were meant to be this missionary territory, say, for an underserved population. You know, in Dallas, that meant Spanish speakers back in the 1950s. And we still have areas which, you know, are largely geographically segregated, where you have a demographic that still absolutely needs those types of schools. They need something different because, you know, now their families can absolutely speak English. They're integrated American citizens, but they still want a connection to their family's culture and heritage. And so, you know, those are the types of schools that we say you have to come back, you have to understand where you came from, and then you have to use that as a way to kind of be that bridge and hopefully that icon within the community. And yeah, I mean, it definitely looks different, but, you know, at the end of the day, if you're really, think centered on this whole idea of mission and serving a population and serving an underserved population, then that's really when Catholic schools begin to thrive and ultimately become pillars and hubs of the community.
Mm. I mean, I think you're giving us a great sense of the sort of mission and the appeal of Catholic schools here, but you also brought up before the issue, which I'm sure is like 50% of your job or more, which is the affordability of Catholic schools, how to make it possible for those who want to come forward to be able to offer this education to their children. So can we just open up that whole box, some of the issues regarding the affordability of Catholic schools? I suppose, like, what do you pay attention to and what's some of the work that you and your colleagues in the diocese are doing to make it as affordable as possible for as many people as possible?
Yeah, we've had a commitment, and Bishop Edward J. Burns, who is the bishop here in Dallas, really believes that any family who wants to get access to a Catholic education should be able to have that ability to access it. And we see this as something from a whole system perspective, where you have to kind of look at every Catholic school in order to figure out how to make sure that everyone can get access. We have kind of two problems in that. It's not just the affordability aspect in Dallas. It's also location issues.
Okay.
So from an affordability standpoint, one of the great things that we've been able to do is we have some pretty fantastic donors here. They've helped us build up an endowment trust, which is nearly $50 million. That goes directly to need-based financial aid throughout the diocese. We have a number of schools that will offer specific discounts for families and then a number of tuition schemes, which are a little bit different than most places. So I have two schools where if you make $60,000 a year or less, you don't actually have a traditional tuition payment. What you have is 7.5% of your gross income, no matter how many kids you have, is what you pay.
Wow.
So you've got five kids, you make $40,000 a year. That's the cost. Okay. And, you know, we've done that largely because we've seen that we think it's important that families ultimately are contributing something. But we also know if you're making $40,000 a year, this has to be a ministry of the church, you know, for us to kind of help you out. And, you know, that's just one aspect of it, though. I mean, ultimately, as we look at it across the spectrum, the other problem that we have is that we're a rapidly growing area. Construction is expensive, and we don't have enough Catholic schools in places where they should be. So we have, for example, in kind of the northern sector of the Diocese of Dallas, we have Frisco. Frisco has five parishes with about 12,000 kids under the age of 12 who would need to drive 50 minutes or more one way just to get to a Catholic school. And, you know, those are elements that we look at to say, traditionally, if your parish had 1,000 kids under the age of 12, you would build a school. So we're kind of short at least 12, you know, schools up and around that area. I've got three grade schools that have, you know, nearly 1,000 kids in them, K through eight. I mean, so even in the areas where we are serving people, we're about as big as you can possibly get. And, you know, and those are aspects that we're trying to look at to make sure that we're still serving the needs of everybody around, you know, not just from an affordability standpoint, but just from an access standpoint. And that's something which, you know, a lot of dioceses don't have to deal with, but we're excited that, you know, these are our problems right now.
Yeah. This is Leonard DiLorenzo. You're listening to Church Life Today on the Spoke Street Media Network. I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Varicki, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Dallas. As you were just mentioning, there's a whole bunch of other dioceses have exactly these kind of issues, opportunities, but also challenges that you're facing. Have you found other models in other dioceses that are somewhat similar, or is this rather distinctive to the Diocese of Dallas, the sort of demographics, the growth, the interest, but also the challenges?
I think that the dioceses which kind of are most akin to us are probably those in Florida, where you have a lot of growth going on, but you also have states which, you know, largely kind of stay out of the way of the church in terms of that development and growth.
Yeah.
You also have kind of changing populations and kind of interesting socioeconomic approaches. But we're also kind of looking at this from the standpoint of saying we're probably pretty similar to the way, say, New York and Chicago and LA were 20 years ago.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's important for us not only to kind of look at this and say we have these tremendous opportunities ahead of us, but also to kind of learn from the past in terms of how should schools be built, where should they be built, you know, how should they be put together. And one of the things that we found is that parish construction and development isn't really typically demographic based. You know, it's based on the whole idea of here's some land that we can get affordably and we're going to build a parish there. Mm-hmm. Maybe it makes sense to have a school on that parish line. Maybe it doesn't. So, you know, we're also looking at models where we can build schools which are not connected to parishes in the same way that they've been before. You know, we have that already in Dallas with a parish that was built and then they said, we need a school, but most of our parish demographic is 6 miles south of here. So the school is 6 miles south of here. Mm. And, you know, it requires a lot more intentionality. I mean, you have to build a chapel on campus. You can't bus the kids over to the church in the same way they could just walk across the parking lot. The pastors have to be more willing to kind of take that intentionality of saying, I'm just not going to walk out of my rectory and over to the school. I'm going to have to get in my car and drive. But those are all things which are ultimately solvable as long as we know, you know, ultimately at root, what makes a Catholic school Catholic. And so I think, you know, those things have been pretty helpful for us as well.
Yeah. Love to pivot a little bit. Maybe if we can spend a little bit of time talking about the role of technology in education, especially, you know, towards the beginning, we talked about these accelerating trends. You know, there was already a kind of movement towards the integration of technology more fully into the classroom and into other educational offerings. That certainly got a huge boost through the pandemic. Like just in my own situation, for example, teaching here at Notre Dame, all of our classrooms within the span of a month and a half developed, you know, Zoom capacities right in the classroom. We could record everything, video, audio. We went back to the in-person traditional classroom setting, and yet now we still have all these capacities that we can use if we choose in certain ways. But that also brings about questions of what is it that we're valuing? What's important for the educational experience we seek to provide? What are the ways in which this could be perhaps more efficient and better run? But what are the liabilities of that? So when you're thinking about all of your Catholic schools, maybe not the same for all of the schools you have, but across the board in Catholic education, thinking about the role of technology, the benefits that come from it, but also perhaps the limitations, how are you thinking about this? What are some of the priorities you may have in place or the things that you're trying to value in terms of the role of technology in education?
Yeah, if you go back to April 15th, 2020, you know, I would have told you.
I would prefer not to, but okay.
Yeah, no. You know, you asked me that question. The first thing I would have said is like, this is going to be the new normal. It's so efficient. It gives us this opportunity to make sure that the very best teachers have access to the students that they need to get access to. And we had things a little bit different here in Dallas, which was by a series of, I would say, grace, luck, and just kind of good timing, we were able to make sure that we didn't have a single break from the pandemic. And so when schools closed, we had actually already prepared to have kind of 2 weeks of virtual instruction. That gave us time to make sure that every school was kind of ready to go. And by, you know, April 1st, 2020, we had live instruction for every student basically going on for 4 hours a day. And what we quickly learned, though, was it was missing out on the very incarnational nature of the faith. Mm. There were things about that which were great, but, you know, basically families, by the time we were getting to May, were saying, you know, this is just not sustainable. We were one of the first school systems back. So we were back in person by August 15th, 2020. We had, you know, everybody set with protocols, and we wound up having about 95% of our students show up in person. We did a hybrid that first year, but most families agreed with us that, you know, the best aspect of this, of Catholic schools, was that incarnational community. And so we found that while there's some really strong elements to this, I mean, basically the idea being, if I have a fantastic teacher who is over at one Catholic school and knows more about math than anybody else, I can now use this technology aspect in order to make sure that that teacher is providing lessons at schools where we don't have as strong of a teacher. But the difference is we're not using that to replace the teacher. You know, we're basically saying we're going to use this technology to leverage the person who's already in the classroom and put those things back together. The other aspect is I think it's been a lot better for parents because we've tried to move a lot of these meetings virtual. So instead of saying, hey, I know you got to come in during your lunch break, you're going to miss lunch, we're going to have a conference, we can just both hop on Zoom together at 8:30 when the teacher has a break, when the parent has a break. And in many respects, it kind of makes those things, you know, a lot easier. So we're trying to use it from an integrated model instead of saying, let's have it replace what existed before. We're trying to say there's some things that just don't need to be done in person. Mm-hmm. And it's far more efficient to do it and use this technology that we now all know how to use for those things that really still need to be done in person. You know, that care, compassion, that connection, we're going to make sure that we don't lose that. And we just don't think that you can ultimately have a robust, strong, sustainable community over Zoom in the long term.
I think everybody would agree with that at this point. That's true. You know, the other aspect of this I think about, and I hear this from a number of friends that I have and other people that I talk to, is the role of technology, therefore, in the home. So depending on the family, there's different kinds of priorities they would want in their home in terms of whether or not computers are very present or present at all. I have friends who are in certain schools where they've gone to more of the technological means for facilitating homework and engagement with the students when they're not in the classroom, but now it's happening in their home, and it's therefore made the parents, these particular parents, kind of shift what they have to do in their home. I mean, that's a big issue, right? Like what happens at school and then what's going to be bridged to home? How do you negotiate that kind of terrain? Because now the actual physical place of the home is being brought into view.
Yeah, this is a huge issue, I think, for education in general, because the other aspect is kids still need to be kids. And yeah. If we're getting to the point of saying for 16 hours a day, you need to be locked into some kind of formal learning activity, you know, for some end in time, then we're really just becoming a society which is all about passing a certain test at a certain time in a certain way. Mm. And from a Catholic perspective, to think about, you know, really kind of the actualization of the whole person, of, you know, becoming the most authentic version of your own self, of kind of connecting with Jesus Christ, those things can't necessarily be formalized. You have to have kind of these spaces for grace to act. And I always come back to the parable of the sower and the seeds. A lot of the time we look at this and we say, hey, we have to make sure the kids are the good soil. But I look at it, say, from a leadership perspective, we have to be the sower. And the sower's job is not to only sow in the area of the good soil. It's actually to throw seeds everywhere. Mm. It's a really inefficient way of doing things. But, you know, ultimately, that's what we're being called to do, to say, let's not make a prejudgment about what's going to be successful and when and where. and instead, you know, just make sure that we're tossing God's word wherever it needs to go and let God do the rest from that. So those are the aspects which, you know, when we try to navigate this from a school perspective, we're really trying to make sure that the family can still be a family, that we're going to get them the things that they need to get so that they can navigate the world in the way that they need to navigate the world. Eventually, they're going to have to take an ACT or an SAT, and they're going to have to get into college. But they're not going to have to do that as a kindergartner. You know, they're not going to have to do that as a first grader. And so, you know, there's this fine line between kind of understanding this is a lifelong journey and kind of getting back to the point of just kind of getting to very specific nitpicky aspects. And the easiest way to do that is just you adjust the curriculum. You know, instead of having kids come in and say, we're going to learn 290 facts this year, you know, we've tried to distill this down to say there's really 40 objectives that you need to learn as a kindergartner. There's 50 that you need to learn as a first grader, 60 as a second grader. It's going to be much more focused on reading and math than, you know, what you're going to be faced with and a lot of other things. And, you know, and great, if you want to do other things at that point, that's fantastic. We're going to take it as far as it wants to go. But kind of getting to the point of just saying, we're going to learn these facts for the sake of learning these facts, it's just not helpful, I think, for families in general.
Yeah. Well, Matt, you've been very generous with your time, and I know you've got things to, many, many things to get back to, and I'm sure people who are listening are starting to get a sense of what is entailed in the role of a superintendent of a major and growing diocese like your own. So I just want to thank you for spending this time and giving us such great insight into what's going on in Catholic education in general, but especially there in the Diocese of Dallas, and blessings upon your work.
Well, thanks, Lenny. It's absolutely fantastic to be here to share what we're doing. And my prayers go out to everybody right now who is working within the church, because this is a really critical time for us to make sure we're continuing to evangelize. So thanks for letting me be on.
Thank you very much. And thanks to all of you for joining us on Church Life Today.
Church Life Today is a production of Spoke Street Media and the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame, and is brought to you in part by Notre Dame FCU and our listeners.
This show is a production of the Spoke Street Media Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, visit spokestreet.com.